Good afternoon to everybody. It's a great pleasure for me personally and to People's Health Movement, which is a global movement and has its presence in 110 countries of the world, to invited for this conference and to speak to this August gathering on issues related to health and justice worldwide. So I am indeed feeling very privileged to be present here today on behalf of People's Health Movement. Can my presentation be started, please? Before on I move to make my presentation, I would start it with the famous freedom fighter of India, Mahatma Gandhi. I am sure a young person might not so much know about Mahatma Gandhi. He was a great freedom fighter of India, and he led India to freedom from colonial rule in 1947. And he made a mantra. Mantra is talisman, essentially a sacred advice kind of a thing, that wherever you are in doubt, or when the self becomes too much with you, apply the following test. Recall the face of the poorest and the weakest man whom you may have seen, and ask yourself if the step you contemplate is going to be of any use to him. Will he gain anything by it? Will it restore him to a control over his own life and destiny? For the hungry and spiritually starving millions, then you will find your doubts and yourself melt away. That is a kind of a mantra he gave for everybody, that whenever you are in any kind of a doubt, you should test it with this feeling and with this imagination. Since the topic of today's conference is health justice, so I have also quoted here Rudolf Virchow, who was a great person, and he said that healthcare providers are essentially natural attorneys for the poor, and if medicine is to really accomplish its great task, it must intervene in political and social life. It just should not limit it to a narrow perspective of health. Thomas said very clearly that we are at the moment experiencing a kind of a crisis in certain parts of country, certain parts of the world, especially some very important health crisis which is taking place. And how and why it's happening, and what underlying causes for it. So as has been talked and already perceived, that there are growing inequalities across and within countries. Health status of countries in South has not improved. This we have seen in spite of, there was a call in 1978 by the World Health Assembly, health for all by 2000 AD, and after 2000, we now have Millennium Development Goals, but many countries of the world are still struggling to achieve even the basic level of health status. Leave aside the highest level of health status, which we are all the time talking about. And one of the essential reasons which has been articulated by People's Health Movement is that neoliberal forces of market-led globalization are perhaps accelerating these inequities in health, and this needs to be addressed and understood. This is just a photograph to show that even now you could see that a large proportion of world's population lacks access to food, education, safe drinking water, sanitation, shelter, land and its resources, employment, and also the healthcare services. This is also another, one could see that public services which are being built in many parts of the world and in many countries are not fulfilling people's needs, because either they have deteriorated because of the cuts in government social budgets, or health services have become less and less accessible and unevenly distributed. This is a slide about what is the current global spending on health in different parts of the world. And you could see that low income countries without India, India, lower middle income countries without China, and also China, they spend less than 5% of the GDP of their countries on health. In comparison to upper middle income countries, Brazil, high income countries without USA, and USA who spend, USA spends of course quite a lot, it's about 15%, and out of that public spending on health, means the government spending on health, also is very high, though there's a some kind of a perception that government in the US doesn't spend too much on healthcare, but government in US also spends quite a lot of money on healthcare. And so all the countries of Europe, high income countries without USA, they also spend around 9% of GDP on health, and out of that the maximum money is coming from the government resources. In comparison to that, if you see India or low income countries, and even for that matter to certain extent China, then you find that government spending on health is far, far less. In India, government spending on health is just 1%, while the overall spending is about 4.5%. So people have to pay out of their pocket, and as a result of that, they have to suffer lots of consequences. Lots of consequences. I'll be talking about it a little later. I'm just giving you some basic facts about these poor and lower middle income countries. They are, according to the classifications done by the UN organizations, they are 96, mostly in Africa, Asia and the Pacific region. Some are in Western Asia, some in Caribbean. Many of them are landlocked, some are small islands. That's how they are all distributed. If we take only the least developed country population, then it is currently around, in 2005 it was 750 million, which will increase to 950 million in 2015. People living with extreme poverty would be 470 million by 2015. If you take the health indicators in different regions, then you could see the vast difference, vast inequity between life expectancy, neonatal mortality rate, infant mortality rate, under 5 mortality rate, and maternal mortality ratio. Life expectancy in Africa, even in 2008, means it used to be 51 in 90, and by 2008 it has just increased by 2 years, it has gone to only 53 years. In comparison to that, if you see European region, then you find that it is 72 and it has now gone to 75. American region also from 71 to 76. So there's a high increase in life expectancy in comparison to these countries of Africa or Southeast Asia region, which has 58, which now has increased to 65. Similarly, if you see the neonatal mortality rate, neonatal mortality is very much influenced by the availability of good obstetric services. If good obstetric services are not available, it's impossible to reduce neonatal mortality rate. So you could see that in Africa, this stands at 40. In comparison to that, in American region it is only 9, and in European it is only 7. Western Pacific region also has only 11. So 40 and 7, that is the kind of a difference one could see, that that's a difference which exists in this world at the moment. And so you could see in infant mortality rate, Africa has 85, in comparison to that European region has only 12. Similarly, under 5 mortality, which is 142, and in European region it's just 14. So I'm just giving you some difference. And then maternal mortality ratio is very, very stark, and one could see that it's about 900 in African region in comparison to just 27 in European region. So that's two extremes which one could see very clearly in. Similarly, if you you analyze it from the point of view of income, then you see that low income and high income difference. And you could see that low income, it has moved from 54 to 57 in 2008, and in high income, it has moved from 76 to 80 in life expectancy. But in neonatal mortality, low income still have experienced 37, while high income only have 4. Infant mortality, 76, and in low income and high income, it is just 6. Under 5 mortality, 118, and in high income, it is just 7. And maternal mortality, one could see the most stark difference, which you find is 650 in low income and just 9 in high income. So that's a kind of a gap which exists. That's a kind of an inequity which exists. This is about HIV, AIDS, malaria, TB, which we have been talking about, and there's lots of emphasis on this under Millennium Development Goals. So you could see that in low income, the HIV AIDS prevalence per 100,000 population is 87, while in high income it is just 4. So is malaria at 56, and in high income it's not available, so it's not existing. Malaria is not a problem in high income countries. So it's not even calculated, counted, and reported. TB, HIV negative people, means TB who are HIV negative people, 48 in low income, and in high income just 1. So that's a kind of a difference which we have. If you take cause-specific mortality of mortality, that was the prevalence of the disease. This is about the mortality deaths in 100,000 population. Then you see that HIV/AIDS, Africa 174, then European region it's just 11, and Eastern Mediterranean region it's just 5. Malaria 104 in African region, and it's just it doesn't exist in European region, and in Eastern Mediterranean it's just 7.5, and Western Pacific region 0.3. So is TB. 51 in African region, and in European region it is just 6.5, and in others it is in between. In American region it's just 3.4. Now under Millennium Development Goals, there are Millennium Development Goals 4, 5, and 6, which pertain to health. And Millennium Development Goal 4 essentially talks about reduction into child mortality. So if we see that what is the status in terms of reduction in child mortality, then in African region, the reduction from 0.9, it has gone to 1.8. So up to 1.8%. There is a reduction. But if you see other regions of the America, it has already reduced to 4.2, and which further has gone down to 4.6%. So similarly, European region from 3.6 reduction to 5.6%, further reduction has happened. So Millennium Development Goal has helped to great extent into regions which are already doing quite well. And it hasn't done so well in regions which were not doing so well even earlier. So that has to be looked into why all this is happening. If you take the mortality rate in children under 5 from 1992 till 2008, then one could see the reduction in low-income countries from 157 to 109. And in high income from 11 to 5. So, and then all in between, kind of a thing which you could see. Global trends in maternal mortality in least developing countries remains the highest, 1,890 deaths per 100,000 live births in the world, under 5 mortality rate is 160 deaths per 1000 live births compared to 86 in rest of the world. So it's far above than the
national average.
Global average, sorry. Very important thing about reduction in maternal mortality and neonatal mortality is the availability of a skilled birth attendant at the time of the delivery. And this is a very sensitive indicator for assessing how health services and especially obstetric-related health services are planned and organized. And you could see that in Africa region, less than 50% of the births are attended by skilled birth attendants in comparison to high-income, upper-middle-income, which are almost 100%, just close to 100%. And one could see the reason why maternal mortality rates are not, maternal mortality ratios and infant mortality, especially the neonatal mortality, is not reducing because of the non-availability of skilled health personnel when they are required the most. So TB, malaria and HIV AIDS, 2.1 million new TB cases were reported in 2004, mainly as a result of HIV AIDS. Rate of new HIV AIDS cases, 3.2% in these developing countries, remains the highest in the world. Malaria, reduction in malaria prevalence in 15 least developing countries, but deterioration in 13 among 30. Means it has reduced in some countries in least developed countries, but it also has increased in some of the least developed countries. So there is no uniform pattern that there is a secular decline or a continuing decline which is happening. There is a mixed picture there. Been said earlier that health is determined by several other factors. It's just not availability of health services alone would improve the health. It means there are social determinants and underlying determinants of health, and amongst them housing, employment, safe working conditions, food, nutrition, all those things are equally very, very important. And water is one of the things that only 50% of the population in least developed countries has access to improved water. That's a safe, potable water to drink. 140 million people live in poor housing conditions. Almost 50% of the population in least developed countries lives on less than dollar a day. That is the kind of a situation in India also. A study was done by one of the very senior member of the Planning Commission of India, and it found that the study found that 80% people of India still live on less than $20 a day, and 60% live on less than $1 a day. While India also is claiming its very high growth rate, and the second or the third richest men of the world are living there, or all those kind of. This is a kind of a contrast which one could find taking shape in almost every part of the world. That way, if we clean drinking water, that was about the LDCs, but if we take the overall picture of all the countries, then 1 billion people lack clean drinking water, 3 billion people lack sanitation, 13,000 to 15,000 deaths per day worldwide from water-related diseases, which is something should be a matter of great, great, great concern for all of us. Hunger kills as many individuals in 2 days as died during the atomic bombing of Hiroshima. Hunger, perennial, chronic hunger may not be extreme starvation, but if there's a chronic hunger, then there's a high possibility of acquiring lots of infectious diseases. And along with that, if these infectious diseases could be very fatal in persons who are in chronic hunger kind of a situation. This is a slide about people using improved sanitation facilities, and one could see the vast difference in Africa region to high income categories. This is also equally important, and this was also touched upon, that the issue of access to essential medicines is one of the most important thing which one requires. But 55% of world citizens lack essential healthcare because of very high cost of medicine. This is what WHO has said. And out-of-pocket healthcare expenditure is the second greatest cause of rural indebtedness in India today. Out of this means out-of-pocket expenditure, 79% of out-of-pocket expenditure is just on medicines. So I'll give you some pictures about show you some pictures about how the pricing of medicines becomes the barrier for people to access healthcare. This is again based on a study of National Council of Applied Economic Research in India, that in 1999-2000, 32.5 million patients fell below the poverty line just after a single hospitalization. Because they had to incur so much of money from their pocket that it was that led them to slide down further from their whatever economic status they had. 40% of those hospitalized were forced to borrow money or sell assets to meet cost, and 23% of ill patients simply never seek treatment because of their inability to pay money for the cost of medicine. So that's a kind of a status which we have. And WHO estimates that 65% of India's population lacks regular access to essential medicines, and this is when India is the third largest producer of medicines in the world. And perhaps it is because drug pricing and the prescription of unnecessary drugs cause all of this. I'll give you, I work in a place called Chittorgarh in Rajasthan. 2 minutes. 2 minutes, yeah. Chittorgarh in Rajasthan. And this is just an example of how drug pricing actually happens. What is the actual price and what is the real price? And this experiment was done in a small district in Rajasthan, and in which what we have shown is that there is a tablet called albendazole. This tablet albendazole is used for deworming. And worm infestation is a very common kind of a problem in most of the poor countries of the world, including India. So 10 tablets, when you buy this in open market, will cost you Indian rupees 250, and that is what printed on the medicine. But in this particular district where I work, we did an experiment with the district government, who the head of the district government was a doctor, and then we went ahead with the drug company and tried to negotiate the actual cost. And you won't believe that they offered the same medicine which was in market available, and in 250 Indian national rupees, they offered to provide us in 11 rupees. See the kind of a difference. If it is 250 rupees, then a large number of families will not be in position to buy these medicines and get this medicine for deworming. But if it is 11 rupees, 10 tablets, perhaps many, many more families can afford to buy those medicines. Similarly, if you take Alprazolam, printed price is 14, their offer price 1 rupee 40 paisa. If you take atorvastatin tablet 20 milligram, which is used for heart patients and they have to take it almost every day, if they buy it in open market, it is 170, while the offer price for the same medicine by the same company was 18 rupees 10 paisa. So this is the kind of a thing which is happening, and the same thing happening for the treatment of HIV/AIDS, that drug companies are selling it as with a huge margin with lots of profit, while there are companies which are ready to offer it at a very cheap rate, very cheap rate. So who is more important, drug manufacturer or a poor countryman? Similarly, if you have to see that open economy, free market in favor of big private players, state withdrawal perhaps is the main cause, no price control on essential medicines, no regulation on unethical drug promotion, TRIPS plus provisions, all these things are hampering access to medicine. This is the way multinational drug company private limited see India is a good market for us. We can price the medicines any which we want. Even the government is moving out of regulating medicine prices. Nothing can stop us now. We can make any amount of profit out of this. This is another such, this one tablet which is priced differently by different companies. This is nemesulide. Some price is 20, some price is 29, some price is 25, some price is maybe around 30, 35 or so. While the actual stockist price is what is written down below, 1.88 rupees. That's the kind of a difference in pricing you could find in India. And so, yeah. I'll finish very soon. Similarly, this is about an injection, amikacine, which is all printed 70 and actual price is 80. The most glaring example is about, this is about a drug called imatinib, which is used for treatment of leukemia, blood cancer. Novartis sells it in 120 capsule. There is a company called Cipla which is ready to make it available in 10,200 and making it available. And Cipla supplies the same to Indian Railways in 6,500. So if it is 6,500, you just can imagine how many more people with suffering from leukemia can afford to buy this medicine, or even the government can afford to buy medicine and treat far, far more number of people. So essentially, my message is that we have to establish health as a basic right by all this global economic equitable distribution of resources has to happen, transfer of technology has to happen, stopping of migration of skilled health personnel from south to northern countries have to happen, and abolition of international covenants and instruments which discriminate against southern countries have to happen. Unless these things do not happen, we really cannot think. And the method for doing is to establish healthcare as a basic human right and establish a health as a right for everybody. These are some of the photographs of the public mobilization which has happened in different parts of the world towards this campaign for universal right to healthcare. And this is again the message from People's Health Movement that human right to health and healthcare must take precedence over the profits of corporations, especially the profiteering pharmaceutical companies. And this is about People's Health Movement, and this is a website address of People's Health Movement. And thank you very much.